Thanks for downloading this podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy wherever they get their podcasts.
Delivering all the news, the informed views, and just telling great motorsport stories since 2003. Powered by the racetalk.com. This is On The Grid.
G'day everyone and welcome to another episode of On The Grid here on mypodcasthouse.com or on the Rodeo Share Limited's RS1. Thank you for joining us. A big show coming your way. Supercar winner on the weekend at the Albert Park Grand Prix, Nick Hercat, to join us shortly to have a bit of a chat about life. He'd be pretty happy with life, I reckon, at the moment. We'll find out in just a tick. Also, Mark Walker, Richard Crowell to join me for the second half of the program to talk about what's been a massive weekend in motorsport. All that to come right here on The Grid.
You're listening to the latest from around the motorsport world. On The Grid.
As I say, g'day to Richard Crowell for the first time today. G'day, Crowellsy.
Oh, Shebex. Have you come down yet from an incredible Australian Grand Prix? Because I don't think I have, and it might take some time.
Well, you have reasons to. You call the actual Grand Prix. I mean, I caught Carrera Cup, which was pretty exciting, but it was just the whole atmosphere was as different. I've never seen it as big and as loud as what it was this time around.
The scale was at a different level. Even compared to last year, it was a big, big step up. So, yeah, spectacular weekend, Shebex. We'll break that all down a little bit later on in the show, of course. But I tell you what, we've been talking a lot about the supercars racing at the Grand Prix and should it be there? Shouldn't it be there? What would the racing like? Massive tick from a racing product point of view. And I think more importantly, Shebex, I'm leading you to this, of course.
Yeah.
Varied results and new winners, which is what we like to see.
We do like to see. There's been too many of the same wins in, not just Formula One, but in supercars as well, hasn't there, over the past couple of years. But this guy's just put his hand up and said, hang on, folks, I am here and I'm here in a big way. Nick Hercat joins us after his victory on the streets of Albert Park. G'day, Nick. How are you?
Hey, boys. How are we?
Good, thank you, mate. Big smile from ear to ear.
Oh, yeah. Anytime you win a race in any sort of motorsport, to be honest, it is a very good day. So, yeah, the smile and phone calls and congratulations texts haven't stopped. So it's very, very cool.
I don't know where to start with it, mate. I mean, such a brutal couple of years that you've already talked about at length, I know. Did you ever stop believing in yourself that you had this ability?
I wouldn't say I stopped believing. I stopped having fun. You always back yourself. You know, no one in any sort of motorsport or sport or business or whatever or anything like what you guys do a really good job. You only get there because you are good at your job. Mm. So, yeah, it's a funny one. It's hard to watch sometimes when you see the comments and stuff, like easier reference, say social media. People kind of forget that there's only 25, 26 seats. And the same for the co-drivers on the grid. So to actually get one out of the millions of people in the country and then the people around the world is very, very difficult. So yeah, I don't think you stop doubting yourself. I think you just kind of you get a bit bashed down and stuff like that. So it's hard to explain. I wouldn't call it the mental health card or anything like that. It's just taxing, you know, just getting berated week in, week out.
Yeah.
And I can get what Richard's saying. And my next question to you then, Nick, is the conversation you had with Matt Stone Racing when you decided that you wanted to leave WAU and find another team. Did you have trouble convincing them that you were the person that they needed based on the results of the past couple of years?
No, actually.
That's good.
Yeah, so look, I didn't reach out to anyone, and you know, Matt knows this at all, and so did the people around me. And then, yeah, at Tail and Bend, obviously had a good, solid weekend, and to be honest, it's actually Chaz who's like, mate, you need to pick up the phone, and like you're too good to not be on the grid. And then obviously people in my corner as well that I've mentioned over the weekend were saying the same thing. So then, that following week. Well, actually, during Taylor Men and spoke to Matt briefly and just said, hey, I'm Nick. I've never met you. I've raced with you or against you a lot. But I wouldn't mind just coming up to the workshop and meeting away from a racetrack. So yeah, we did that, and I flew up, I think it was the following week or the week after, and of Tail and Bend. And yeah, it was never like, I never had to sell myself, never anything. We just spoke race cars. And I think, you know, there's someone else in the background, Mr. James Rosenberg, who's very, very good friends with Jimmy Stone, spoke to Jimmy and said, I think Nick can drive. There's no doubt. And Jimmy agreed. And I think he had played a big part in the decision too. So there was a few little moving factors there, but yeah, Matt never once questioned the way it was drive. It was more like, hey, do you want to come drive our car? We think we can put you in the right spot. So yeah, it was a bit of a different kind of conversation.
James Rosenberg, I'm going to get him on a podcast for a long sit down at some point in the future, because his story is so underrated, what he's done in Australian motorsport, in particular supporting people like you, and the list is extremely long. We'd need an entire pod to discuss that, just the two of us, let alone getting James involved. You said on the weekend that from the moment you got there to MSR, it felt comfortable. Can you just describe what that feeling's like, if you can? Because I think it's an underrated element of professional sport, is having an athlete feeling comfortable in their environment. What does that mean to you? What is comfortable to Nick Percat?
A room or workshop full of, we say racers, and it's a hard probably term for maybe the general public or the, you know, the fans at home to understand, but it's guys that have either raced a car, raced a go-kart, not your traditional, well, not just manager, just a CEO or a manager. It's a person that just lives and breathes it from when they're a child as well. I think that's probably the term, the way best to describe it, because when I go to MSR, you know, there's, everyone's just racers. And, you know, Bellotti, my engineer, actually did data engineering at a go-kart team that Brad Jenner, who now drives for me at J&D, was that. Like, it's just crazy, crazy small world. But I don't know, I got there and it was more like, what can we do for you to make you go fast? And basically, you know, there's no denying, obviously, they're not the same budget of other teams, but there's not been a single thing that has been too hard. From it, fly me up to visit or whatever it is, you know, I don't ask for much. It's not like I'm demanding anything, but you know, there's never a question. It's just like, oh yep, whatever you need to go fast, you know, little things like master cylinders and just anything. It was just, what do you like? And I think that's the big difference, because you feel like you come into a team, obviously knew they were really fast. Even, you know, before the Gen 3 car, I thought they showed glimpses. That year, was it Hazelwood and LeBrock?
Yep.
And to be honest, it was probably just that they were had a couple of cars that were probably getting a bit long in the life, and they were getting ready for Gen 3. So I kind of knew they were a fast team. But then, yeah, when I went there, and like I said, they're just racers. One of the first person to come up to me is Jimmy, Stone, Matt, and everyone's just so excited. So I think that's what makes you feel very comfortable. And then, yeah, like I said, nothing's been too hard. And yeah, it's just kind of been a really kind of easy thing to step into. It's like I've been there for 5 years already. So it's quite an interesting feeling.
And the person that's probably most excited out of everyone in the workshop is yourself. I mean, you've finally got a car that you are competitive in. And for the first time in your career, in the first couple of races, you've had a top 10 finish in every race. And all of a sudden, things are happening.
Yeah, it is. I've never had a championship start like this. You know, I felt like myself and Brad Jones, and hey, he had a few unlucky starts to years with a few dramas where we wouldn't score points and I'd leave there. Yeah, I'd have one good race and then I'd leave round one battling to get back, and then I'd spend the year trying to scrape my way back into the top 7, 6 of the championship. But I've never had a start like this where I left Bathurst and I was shitty with myself because I really fast in practice. I was really fast at the preseason test, and I was like, in qualifying, I kind of nearly didn't want to muck it up, if that makes sense. I went into my shell a bit and I was like, oh, just underdrove it and qualified still well, you know, went into top 10 shootouts, but it was like, oh, I should have probably qualified in the top four or five if I just drove it like I did in practice. So I was actually a bit annoyed at myself that we didn't get better results. And then, yeah, AGP, obviously it's rolled out seriously quick out the gate. And yeah, it is crazy. You know, so many times as a driver, you do your first flying lap and your engineer will be like, yeah, you're P5, 4, whatever it is. You kind of feel like you pop up the top. And then sometimes you expect by the time you do your cool down lap and come in, they hand you the tablet. You're like, oh, I'm 16th. But it just hasn't happened so far with this car. It's like, yeah, mate, you're P1, P2, and you come in and you're still there. So it's, yeah, it's pretty cool. And I think for whatever reason, the philosophy of the car setup makes a lot of sense to me. From the moment I sat down with Jack, my engineer, and Matt, and they explained the way they go about it. And I was like, oh, yeah, that makes perfect sense. And there were some things in the car that I'd never experienced before in a supercar. And that has been, yeah, now I've used it and driven it. It's like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. And yeah, we just keep it in that little window, and it's been quite good.
Yeah, and it would strike me that an opportunity to continue to build on that exists when you go to essentially a level playing field for everybody in Taupo next time out. Talk to me about this race, though, Nick, because once those two Fords had removed themselves from the equation, you then dealt with Brock Feeney and Will Brown for almost all of it. What was the scrap like? Just walk us through the actual race, because it was a genuinely very, very good supercar race, thoroughly entertaining to watch. What was it like behind the wheel and fending off those two young blokes in the Red Bulls?
Yeah, well, the first thing was probably important to get a good start, because the way you start the Camaro and the Ford is a little bit different, I've noticed. I felt like I nailed them on the weekend, so I was like, okay, just don't muck the start up, get it off the line well. And I actually, all weekend, you know, in practice I was quick, made two mistakes in qualifying, so I had a 14th and 18th, but every single time I drove back onto that lead pack, like, no dramas.
Yeah, really quickly.
So, you know, race one, I felt like I could have raced Brock and Will Brown for the win, but I knew I had a penalty, so it was more like, hey, let's just not disrupt this group and try and pull away so I can not lose too many spots at the end of it. And, you know, race two, I drove straight back to the front. So I was very confident when the two Fords of Payne and Chaz were in front of me. I was like, oh, we can go a fair bit faster here. And I felt like no one in that lead top five group, it actually had to come from too far back to experience how hard you could push the car and how hard you could push the tire. And I felt like they were saving too much tire early. So that's why when I saw them skittle off, I thought, well, that's made my life a bit easier. I'd already had my plan of where I was going to pass Chaz because that car was quite strong early. And from then on, I just put my head down and, you know, I just tried to, every other race, it felt like we kind of did mid-low 50s. And I thought, you know, if I can set the pace at a mid 49, make everyone work for it, that'll be good. And that's what I did. I just did 49.2 every lap. And I thought, if they're going to come get me, they're going to have to seriously use the tire. Because I thought I was like using just enough, you know, before it was going to overheat and potentially blister or something like that. So, yeah, from then, when my engineer said, oh, Feeney's kind of held back a little bit and he's going to have a crack later in the race, I thought, perfect. He has to catch a second or so. You know, that doesn't happen in one corner. So, yeah, the battle with Brock was really good. I knew he would have – I knew he wanted to pass me straight away because you don't want to sit in the turbulent air that long, overheat your front tire. So I thought he's been strong on the brakes all week at 3 and 11. And when it came at 11, I thought, perfect, I'm going to open up the door here and over and under him. And to his credit, we were joking after. I'm like, if you held the brake for 5 centimeters longer, I couldn't have got back. Like, it was done. You had it. Because I only just scraped under his tail light. You know, like, it was tight. And then from then on, I knew he used tire to try and drag race me to the next corner. Managed to hold him off. I think we both got a little bit lucky when he came around the outside of me because we just started interlocking wheels. So when we had a little rub, it interlocked my rear wheel to his front a little bit. It kind of half straightened me up. And I was like, no, 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 don't run him off. Like, this is bad. Because you don't want to run him off and get a 5-second penalty or a crash. But then I looked in the mirror and saw the two Red Bulls. I thought, perfect. Get out of here. Let them battle for two corners. And you can get away quite quickly at the Grand Prix. And yeah, I knew Brock had worked Will had worked hard to get back to second. I kind of let him come a little bit. I felt like I was like that much in control, I'm like, oh, I can let him get to me and heat up his tyres a bit more. And then the last lap and a half, I used up everything I had and got that little bit more of a margin out. So, yeah, the car was honestly amazing all weekend, and we didn't really change the setup from final practice all the way through. So, it's, yeah, credit to my engineer and the work they're doing back at the workshop, because it makes the weekend way, way easier when you have that.
What did you think when you saw the 2 litres in the fence?
Oh, the Fords.
Yeah.
Honestly, I knew I had way more pace than them. That wasn't an issue. I actually wanted them there to have a rear gunner for when the Red Bull cars came, because I looked at passing Chaz at turn three on that lap, and then I was like, oh, I'll just get him at 11. Like, the car had that much pace. As a driver, you know when it's your day. Like,
yeah.
I was like, it doesn't matter what they do. I'm going to get in front of them, and they're going to battle. And I was just like, perfect. I'll just hold the build up. That's all I wanted.
Mm.
But so them going off actually didn't help me.
Like, yeah.
It gave me the clear air, but I was hoping to have them as my nearly like a rear gunner, because I don't know. There seems like it's a bit of sheep stations in the Ford camps at the moment of who's the first Ford home.
Yeah, just a bit.
So that's what I felt like. I was like, all these Ford blokes want to prove that they're the best Ford team. And yeah, that was my kind of thought. If I just get in front of them, they're going to battle royale it. So yeah, worked out well that they kind of had that unfortunate run in, which, you know, it's hard down there. That I can, if you don't speak to, well, yeah, for Chaz, you know, when you take a little bit of front aero off the car, you do actually pick up a little bit of front locking. So yeah, I can see it's so easy to do. You have to brake so gently down there, even though it is a high speed corner. You know, he just wanted to get a run on him and maximize his entry and stuff like that. But it's one of those ones where the splitter comes down a bit different or something like that, you just don't get the front aero and you just lock a brake without doing anything different. So it's a very tricky corner.
Did we inadvertently stumble on the best racing format for supercars at Albert Park by not having the access to the pit lane? Because all four of those races were great. There was enough tyre conservation versus wear and deg to give a really good sort of split throughout the field. And some people would do something here and others would do something there. There were varied results, genuinely entertaining touring car racing. It would be how I'd describe it. It was proper, you know, elbows out touring car racing, which 100%. Admittedly the track lends itself to. But is that the format moving forward for Albert Park? Do we wholly embrace the sprint race at Melbourne?
I think so, to be honest. Like, the racing was good. Like, the way, I don't know, the driver group was left to their own devices, which is scary. Sometimes not the smartest blokes. But you saw different strategies in the way the race played out. So, the Red Bull guys were like, let's just keep them at bay and hold the tyre and go for the fastest lap at the end. That was their game plan. That's what it felt like in the first two. It got a little bit rocked when Frosty was in around there and, you know, Payne and stuff like that, because they would have to try and defend. And that's when we saw mistakes from them in that lead group. And, you know, myself would run out the back of chairs and stuff like that, like, because you knew you just wanted to get to the front so you could dictate it. And then you saw my plan, which was go fast and stretch the field out, or that top four out a bit. But then I've watched the replay and it was still on for young and old.
So was, mate.
On. Like, I was like, oh, it's good I stretched the field out. I'm like, oh, hold on now. The guys in 6 to 12 were freaking out of control. But yeah, to be honest, I actually, even that pit setup we had, those, I think we had more space than we normally have at the Grand Prix with those marquees. All the teams were interacting together. Like, even so, on our side of the marquees, we had next to us BJR and Team 18, and who else was on the other side of us? The Penrite guys. And it was like every time someone did an engine run up, we'd all clap and cheer. Like, it was just fun. And it just felt, I don't know, it felt, I liked that little setup better than pit lane. For whatever reason, you know, if they could figure out a way, I know everyone was angry, couldn't get crowd in there and stuff like that. But I guess unless you were there, you could see, you can completely understand why it was difficult. How they're going to manage the crowd with the F3 cars there, the F2 paddock right there. But I'm sure we can come up with a way where at certain times of the day, the crowd can come in, you know, and basically like a pit walk. But I thought it was great, to be honest, from the pits to the racing on track, I thought it was actually quite a cool event.
I mean, when I was doing a bit of research on you today before the interview, it's one of those weird ones. Because you won Bathurst at such a young age, I think you remain young for the rest of your life.
I do.
And I couldn't believe that you'd been racing for 14 years as a full-time driver. It just doesn't seem that long.
It doesn't. Yeah, I think I'm still getting asked for ID, so I'm pretty happy with it.
Oh, really? Come on.
Yeah, no, actually, it was only in December. I was buying drinks for New Year's Eve, and the guy at the bottle shop's like, I didn't have my wallet on me. I just had my phone to pay ID, like the pay on your phone. And the guy's like, oh, sorry, you need your ID. And I'm like,
no.
Bailey pissed herself laughing. She's looking at the guy going, you can't be serious.
That's and I'm funny. Like,
you buy it then, Bailey. And then he's like, no, you don't need ID. I'm like, ha.
Oh, no. Oh, that went down well. Oh, my God.
But, yeah, no, I feel like I've been in the category a long time. That's why I mentioned, I think in the press conference or somewhere, we're talking about racing against Brock and Will.
Mm.
But it's easy to forget, like, Garth Tander and James Courtney were my teammates, and Tim Slade, when I first entered the championship.
Yeah.
And it was on as a team, like, internally. Like, I will never forget, like, Adelaide 500 round one. Somehow I've qualified well for Sunday, and Garth just moved me out of the way, and we're teammates. Like, it was cutthroat. Like, every round with those three, it was cutthroat to be the lead car. Mm. And then in that era, you know, there was times in my career that I've, you know, raced Wing Cup for the win at SMP in the COVID time. Then the following weekend, SVG, and Scotty Mack at Darwin and Frosty. Like, I've had a very good run of who I've raced against. So when it came to racing those two guys, I was like, haven't seen a whole lot of Brock, to be honest. He's just rocked up and been too fast in a good car.
Mm.
Seen a little bit of Will. But yeah, it was interesting. I just knew they were both strong at the brakes. So that's what I just knew I had to be ready for that. But yeah, I've been very fortunate in my career so far who I've raced against.
Yeah.
Before we let you go, mate, tell us about the go-kart team. How's it going? Any young superstars in your squad we should be looking out for? What's the plan for the remainder of the year from a karting team perspective?
Well, yeah, it's still early in the year and we've already had a massive, massive year. You know, the way my team runs with J&D, we focus on the junior, like the younger drivers. We only have two seniors in the team and one is, like I mentioned before, Brad Jenner, who multi-Australian champion, and he's a very good friend of mine. So it was kind of a favour from him to come drive for us to help mentor the young kids. But yeah, there's a few really good drivers in there. I got young Brad Madgeman, who's still racing karts this year with us in the Premier Junior category, K2, but he's also just starting to dabble into some open wheeler stuff over in America. So he's kind of starting the transition, which is really cool to see. And then, yeah, like my other juniors have just had a huge race at the state title, finished 1-2 with Riley and Jack, who young Riley's fresh to junior, so I'll have him for a couple of years, but then Jack's probably, we're starting to talk about where and how I can help him make the next step into maybe a car if they leave karts. So yeah, it's pretty exciting. And then the young cadets are going gangbusters. So it is very cool. But we only had about round one of our national championship. So our next one's the same weekend as New Zealand for me. So the other two who run the business with me, Jake and Dan, will be running it there. And then, yeah, we've got some pretty cool plans with Fernando and his management team to head over to Spain and, you know, actually spend quite a few weeks there and at his kart track. And then with the team he supports in Spain with DPK, probably have some drivers do some races with them. But it was pretty cool. That whole thing is amazing. It makes me really happy how it's all worked out and the way all the kids are. Because I had, they all came on the weekend on separate days, but then they had pit tours through the F3 cars, with some Alonso drivers through the F2 cars. A couple of them were fortunate enough to get down to the F1 pit lane because the timing worked out well and meet Fernando and stuff like that. So
fantastic.
Yeah, it is very, very cool. And then Sunday after our race, I was lucky enough to go have a quick catch up with Fernando while he was getting ready. He was having lunch and got a message saying, hey, be at the F1 paddock gate in 4 minutes during the press conference. So I just ran out, literally like a race fan. I just literally was like, I have to go, I'm sorry. And I just legged it.
Magnificent.
And sat there with Fernando for 15, 20 minutes and his two managers while he had his pasta, and guess what he wanted to talk about? Go-karts. So,
go-karts.
good.
Yeah, we just spoke about what we're going to do next with the young drivers and who we can take over. So it's very exciting for, I guess, Australian kart team to be able to have that link is unbelievable because they're more passionate than me about it nearly, which is incredible because I'm basically 7 days a week in the factory prepping the karts, finding new bits and pieces to make them go faster and trying to find an advantage for them to on track. So, yeah, Fernando's wired the same. They said, we'll get back Monday morning to Spain and he'll be at his in his go-kart.
Wow.
So, yeah, I think I've met my match in,
beauty.
You know, passion for karting.
Yeah. He didn't mention anything over your lunch conversation about plans to slow people up in turn six or anything, did he? Do you reckon he brake checked, George?
Have you seen the onboard?
From Russell or Alonso?
No, from Fernando's car.
No, I haven't seen the Alonso one yet.
Find it. It's on, I saw it on Instagram. And yeah. The thing is coughing and spluttering like crazy.
Yeah.
So there's more to the story that we'll never, ever know.
Of course.
But maybe a throttle cable snap. Not sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
No, but yeah, when you watch the onboard, the thing is literally sounds like it's on two cylinders on the way back to the pits.
Yeah, right. Interesting.
And he actually says it on the radio before the crash. He says, I've got an issue with the throttle.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, who knows? He's a wily old fox.
Isn't he just? Nice work, mate. That's awesome.
Hey, mate, congratulations. A win is a win, and you've got that under your belt for 2024. May there be more of them to come over the next 6 or 8 months. We thank you for your time today, mate, and look forward to keeping an eye on you throughout the entire season.
No worries. Thank you, boys.
Nick Percat joining us here on the grid.
We'll be back to more on the grid in just a second. Now, let's face it, everyone needs insurance. So when you need to renew your cover, the On the Grid hot tip is to give our mates at City Rural Insurance Brokers a call. City Rural have been dealing with the insurance industry for years, and they've got more than 50 years of industry experience. Need insurance for your business? They'll sort it. Are you a landlord and want to cover your rental properties or investments? They're your people. Or are you like me and need professional cover in case you say something silly on a podcast? City Rural can sort that too. They did it for me and it was super easy. The best thing of all is that City Rural are, like you and I, motorsport people. If you've watched car racing this year, you might have even seen their logo on cars like the legendary Richard Mork Super Ute, among others. They know our game and they know the people that follow it. So support the people who back our industry. And when you need to throw a new setup at your insurance cover, drop Andrew and his team at City Rural Insurance Brokers a line and they'll fix you up. Head to cityrural.au or follow the links on the racetalk.com. City Rural, better cover, better service. And now back to the podcast.
There's more great motorsport stories coming next. On the grid.
Second part of the program. Time to bring in Mark Walker to the show as well. G'day, Mark.
Hello, Tony Specky. Richard Crail. Richard Crail. TV's Richard Crail.
Three-time Formula One commentator.
Tell us everything, omit no details.
Oh, I don't know where to start. No, I had a quite competent weekend, Mark. As far as weekends go in my little career or whatever the hell it is you want to call this, that was a pretty good one. Pretty good one. I don't know where. Do you want to fire some stuff at me? Questions you'd like answered? Nothing I can do.
I've got a question. Did you feel this year that you were probably more competent than you have? Not that you haven't been in the last 2 years, but did you feel that it was just naturally you this year?
Yeah, I did. I really did. And I don't know why. It was interesting that this was the third year I'd worked with Tom Clarkson, who's one of life's great individuals. And the second year working with Damon Hill. But we all agreed on Sunday night that it felt like the three of us had called the first two Grand Prix together before doing Melbourne. When in reality, we hadn't worked with each other for 358 days or whatever it was between races. So it felt really natural, which was great. And that's the key, I think, for good broadcasting is feel comfortable with your colleagues and you get that rapport and that bond. Mm. You know when the other people are going to talk and when you can shut up. And it felt really great. The other thing I will say, I was fortunate enough to have Gunter Steiner as part of the broadcast on the weekend. And I think there's a lot of expectation around Gunther based purely on his portrayal in Drive to Survive. So a couple of things. One, I walked down to the Formula One paddock where they were doing their opening hosting on Friday, and I walked down with Gunther and a couple of others in the team. And outside of Oscar Piastri, Lewis Hamilton, and probably Charles Leclerc, that bloke got the largest cheer from Melbourne Walk. He is dead set bona fide superstar among Formula One fans. He is also one of the nicest people I've ever met. Couldn't be more engaged. What did I do? What do I commentate? What do you think about this? Rah, rah, rah. I will say that every third word was a profanity that you're not allowed to mention on national television. But the best irony of it all was when he was interviewing Kevin Magnussen on the grid.
Oh, yes.
K-Mag dropped an F-bomb on live TV. And Gunther was incredibly proud that it wasn't him. It was tremendous.
Yeah.
But no, just, mate, it's, as you boys know with me, like, this is the weekend that literally my dreams are made of. So to be part of it was outstanding. I thought 10 did an amazing job. It was a great broadcast, and we've had really positive feedback, which is always nice. It's not what you do it for, but it's nice to have. And I've called three more Formula One races than I ever thought I'd get to do in my life. So it's pretty special.
Right, this is just between us. More name drops, please.
More name drops?
Yes, please.
Well, I worked with Damon Hill, the 1996 world champion. Aware of that. He bought me dinner on Friday night, which was nice, with a lovely tie. I don't know. What name drops would you like?
Interesting ones.
Cool. Saw Mark Howard there of the Howie Games.
No, you had dinner with him too, didn't you?
Wasn't working with us, but we saw him and had a lovely chat. He's great. I don't know. It's so nice. It really is cool. The people in the F1 paddock as well, an interesting group of human beings, but everyone I've spoken to in there, really welcoming, and caught up with some expat Aussies that are on the circus. So Sam Barker, formerly of Supercars Digital, who helped set up basically what is the current Supercars Digital team, and Supercars do a lot of things that we would question, but their digital content is outstanding, and that team works incredibly hard. So it was nice to see Sam. He works for Formula One now. Very old mate of mine, Dwayne Blee, who I worked with way, way back in the days of Talk TV on Channel 31 Adelaide in 2004. He works for Formula One now, which was terrific. Got to hang out and work with friend of the show and a good buddy of ours, Mark Sam Power, who's also one of life's great humans and has become very successful in his role in running corporate experiences for Formula One events around the world. And a lot of our mates as well. Rusty was there, Cam was there, the whole Matt Nolte was there, and the whole team. So
I was there too,
and Shebex was there calling Mark Carrera was there. Cup doing my job.
It was a lot of fun, actually. There was some great Carrera Cup racing. Another question from me: as a Formula One commentator, do you get the opportunity that someone like a Crofty or a Martin Brundle will, where you could just walk into the garages and talk to the personnel about what's happening? Is that, as you only call the one race, are you afforded that luxury?
Honestly, I don't know. I'm not actually not sure. That's a very good question. I don't know because I've never tried it.
Yeah, okay.
Because I'm not, in the pecking order of Formula One commentators on the weekend, I was last because I'm just a one-off ring-in for the domestic host broadcaster. There's this mate, every version of Sky has their own team, and, Italia, Spain, obviously Sky Sports UK. Mm. So I don't know, mate. I never tried it. I didn't just try and amble into the back of a garage, which I imagine is what Crofty or Ted or somebody like that could do. Good question. I've got a question for Mark.
Oh.
Shooting Formula Uno, and indeed just that event. 27,000 plus photos on the weekend. How was
57 it? 57 kilometres.
Yeah.
70 something kilometres.
What was it? Jeez.
Don't sure change the man. How was your experience? What was your experience like behind the scenes taking photos? Bloody good ones too.
Interesting. Yeah, I had a better swing at it this year. I sort of came into it better prepared, and I think I did a better job of it. But it was an interesting year. I think last year there were facets of it that were better and easier. For instance, last year with all those red flags, during the race, it meant that you could get around the circuit a lot more because the race went for 45 minutes longer. So you could cover a lot more ground, which was nice. Yeah. This year, the race went by so quick, you just couldn't cover that much ground in the race, which was...
Fast race, too.
Fast race. The number of people there, that was a bit of a chore. Yeah. Like that, you had to really think about what you were doing and where you were going and what, how are you going to manage your time? Because on Friday, I made a mistake. I left my lens hood behind at a corner. I got over the bridge on the back straight and got, oh, I've left my thing there. And it cost me 20 minutes just to make a 3-minute round trip because there's so many people there on Friday, let alone the rest of the weekend. And the other, the couple other things that sort of cramped my style for the weekend was all the measures in place to stop those track invasions from last year. They had so much more fencing up. They had so much more security. I mean, some of them were helpful, some of them were not. Things like they had a photo tower at the pit exit there, but to get to it, you had to leave the track and sort of go back out into the general admission area and then back in. It was just horrendously planned out. That was really tough. And all the extra fencing, it sort of took a lot of the photo options out of play, which was difficult. And the other thing that sucked was the driver parade. Last year, when they all were given an MG each, it was spaced out. They had their name on the windscreen. You could get a nice photo of all the drivers. All the fans could wave and cheer their favourite drivers on as they went around the circuit. This year, they stuffed them all in the back of a truck. And they all just went and talked to their friends and sort of half paid attention, give them a little bit of a wave to the crowd, which I think cheated the crowd out of that sort of driver parade experience and certainly made our lives a bit more difficult too because that really sucked. But it was still, it's amazing. Formula One's ridiculous. The whole show's just out of control. It's really cool to go and be a part of that for 5 days.
So, Mark, as a photographer, Richard just mentioned before about the pecking order for commentators, is there a pecking order for photographers? Do the regular guys who follow the circuit week in and week out get a preferred position of photography as opposed to someone who turns up to one show a year?
No, I think there's probably more respect paid to the locals at the Formula One than there probably is at a supercars event, to be brutally honest with you. in a lot of respects, it's sort of there's no real pecking order there. You know, if you wanted to go and shoot in the pit lane, you put your name in the hat and, you know, you're shot there. A lot of the local guys did get to go and shoot in the pit lane, and they said that some of the international people were just hopeless at, you know, getting run over and paying attention to where they were and their spatial awareness. So I think the Aussie guys did a really good job on the weekend. You sort of look around the media center and you can judge looking on people's computer screens what sort of photos they were taking. And I think we've got a lot of photographic talent here in Australia doing a pretty decent job. So, yeah.
Fantastic. Can I burn a hot early?
Please.
Yes.
While we're discussing McLaren. Was it right for them to ask Oscar to let Lando through?
Yes.
I mean, is it?
Yeah, 100%.
And I get it, but it's Oscar's home race. We've never had an Aussie on the podium. Do you just let him race?
Nah.
Surely you let him race.
Nah, Lando was going to pass him anyway, Shebex. It was going to happen. There was a significant, and to use a Formula One term, delta, between the two tires that each guy was running. Oscar had stopped earlier. Yes, he got an undercut. Yes, he just squeezed in front of Lando, but with the way the tire deck worked and the way that race played out strategically, Lando was going to breeze past him at some point anyway, and it would have compromised or had the risk of compromising their race regardless. And I think there were some nerves in McLaren possibly about attacks from behind, be it George Russell, possibly Fernando as well, who looked pretty racy at times. And we'll come to him, obviously. But I think they made the right decision for the team in the third Grand Prix of the season. If that was the last race of the year and they were fighting for third and fourth in the World Championship and Oscar was in front, maybe they do it differently. But it's race three. Lando was always going to pass him. And the Aussie curse of fourth place in your home race continues. Fourth time that's happened now. Oscar's the third driver that's finished fourth in the Australian Grand Prix in Melbourne. But yeah. No, they had to do that. They made the right call. The fact that McLaren were as competitive as they were is a huge outcome of the weekend, because they were very, very nearly as good as Ferrari in the race. Like, Lando finished 3 seconds behind Leclerc, or before the VSC came out, and was putting the pressure on. So they're contenders in the right conditions, the right day of the week. So that's a bigger positive, I think, overall.
Been a bit of a while since we've had Hamilton and Verstappen both out of a Grand Prix.
Well, the last time was was good for Australia, because it was the 2021 Italian Grand Prix at Monza, when they shunted each other at turn one. Yeah, which turned out to be a pretty good day for us. But it was great. I the place when Max's thing.
I was going to ask you that, because you're in a soundproof booth and you weren't that far away from where I was down at turn one.
Yeah.
And I've never in my life heard a sporting crowd make noise like that. That was ridiculous.
It was 90,000 at the G, like equivalent. Yeah. Like, our commentary boxes were reasonably soundproof, but not that soundproof. And there was that big grandstand directly opposite us, just turn one side of the big Rolex bridge on the start-finish straight where we were, and it went mental. And there was a big corporate suite above us, so that went off as well, and they were all pissed. So it was, it was really, what a moment that was. When people realised that he was in trouble, it built and built and built. And then, when he retired, the joint went completely and utterly crazy, which was pretty special. So that was a cool moment. It was a cool moment when Oscar did sweep around the bows of Lando and get that position. They cheered that pretty hard, because he was third for a moment. Even on Saturday, when all too briefly Daniel got out of qualifying three before he lost his lap for track limits, the place cheered really hard for him as well. So the football style crowd was really grabbed me. And, you know, for all the comments of this Netflix generation coming to F1, it's a very, very, very knowledgeable crowd, isn't it, in Melbourne? Like, they know their shit. They know what's going on. They know what's good. It was pretty special. Pretty special. And
on that turn one, it was very funny earlier in the weekend during some of the support race. I remember there was a Porsche race where someone was just battling. They came down there and spun out at turn one every lap. And every other lap after that, they'd all just golf clap him. And it took a little while to figure out that they were just golf clap. And then when Jackson Evans was wobbling around at the back of that first V8 race, it was just polite golf claps every time he went past and dragged some more garbage all over the racetrack. It was fantastic.
Yeah, it was great. Can we burn a collective hot? Because I think we all agree at this.
Yep.
Is collective hot Formula One Australian Grand Prix?
Yep.
Like, I've been to some pretty big motorsport events in my life, and that is right up there for scale and scope and energy and just, like, it's the vibe, man.
Yeah, if you were there and you didn't enjoy it, you're very hard to please.
There's some negatives. We'll get to those when we do some knots. But, my God, from an event point of view, that was outstanding. And I don't know why it felt so much more significant than last year. I don't know. But to me, it did. And just the whole, everything around it. From, we drove in before gates opened every morning, and the lineup at the gate, gate 13 out between between turn 11 and turn 12, when you drive in off Fitzroy Road or whatever it is, and around the back of Albert Park there. And just the fact that they were lining up almost all the way out to the main road before gates opened.
That's not the good gate.
No.
That's not the good gate to be at. You want to be at gate one to
gate one,
place.
Correct. Well, I was going to knot our timing in the knots, but I'll burn this now because it's relevant. So we timed our drive in poorly on Saturday morning, because we beat the gates opening at the back of the circuit. But by the time it took us to drive around from turn 11, 12 where we drove in to do the full loop to get to the underpass beneath the bridge before turn one. Well, it had ticked through to 8:30 and the gates were open. We were stopped at the head of the queue by gate one, the motoring queue, this is, for 15 minutes, while an endless stream of people aged anywhere between 15 and maybe 25 pelted in at full pace to get to the Melbourne Walk. At like pelted, absolutely charging. There was just a 15-minute stream of people sprinting from gate one to get to the Melbourne Walk to be in the front row. It was extraordinary, to the point where certain knowledgeable people that were in my car said this is like Silverstone and the British Grand Prix, and that's probably it's one of the more hardcore fan events of the year from a tradition point of view. So that was amazing. So our timing sucked because we blew 15 minutes to sitting in the car, but at the same time, we couldn't believe it. Could not believe it. It was we got out and went up to security and said, when do you plan to let us go? Because if you look behind us, there's a traffic jam that now goes all the way back to gate 13 or wherever it is. And old mate was like, mate, I'm not going to stop these guys running now. There'll be a riot. So, and he would have been right because they were all just pelting in. It was amazing. That was just truly something to behold. Unbelievable.
A few times there, I went and watched it from the Melbourne Walk section, and the lack of fitness was showing on some of them by the time they got that far. It was pretty bad situation they were in there. They were nowhere.
Yeah.
You got to train harder. If you're going to put the effort in to line up at the gate at 3 a.m. so you can be first in, work on your fitness so you can stretch it out the whole way through.
Correct. Well, what would have killed him would have been the run up the overpass, because they would have to run up the steps, wouldn't they?
Or the under the tunnel. Yeah.
Well, you have to have a pass to get under the tunnel, so I reckon they all went through the overpass.
Well, they must have, Jesus, good luck to them. It was very funny. The other option, of course, would be just to plow in there, having had a big night, and not stop and just keep going. That would be plan B. You'd probably feel that about midday, though, I would have thought. But even the Melbourne Walk, we walked out on the Friday when the F3 race was happening that evening, and there were a bunch, like it was packed because they were all waiting for the F1 drivers to leave, but they were all watching the F3 race on the big screen. And as those kiddies in F3 carved each other up in their version of Moto3 racing, which it was, they were oohing and ahhing, oh, look at that. Oh, he's crashed. Yay. Cheers. Like it was, they knew what was going on. They had a Formula 3. It was, and that was a surprise. That was very, very cool. Unbelievable event.
A lot more to come in hots and knots, I'm sure, on the Grand Prix. But let's just quickly cover off on the supports. We spoke to Nick Percat about supercars. That format, you're absolutely spot on, was quite amazing.
Yeah, hot.
No tyre changes, no petrol. Just get out there and race.
It's like when we inadvertently stumbled on a good qualifying format for the 12-hour because we had to. Like, they got kicked out of pit lane, so inadvertently supercars have stumbled on a really good racing format for Albert Park. It was great. Great racing, properly engaging, really good racing. And I don't know if it's just rose-coloured glasses from me or not, but it felt like, especially that late race Saturday, it felt like more people stuck around for the supercar race this year, like the evening sessions. I don't know, maybe it's just me, but it felt really busy. The grandstands looked really full, but it was bloody good racing.
Well, I could tell you on two nights I had the last race, with the Carrera Cup, and I'm walking out, there's still a lot of people walking out. So, you're spot on.
Yeah, it was great racing. Unpredictable. Yes, the Red Bulls won or finished second in every race, but who cares when they're carving each other up? And, that was properly meaningful motorsport. And that is the best short race show, pit stop or not, that supercars have put on in some time. That was a big tick for mine. Big tick.
Harry Jones and Wood duked it out.
Literally.
That was some of the most amazing conversation I heard coming out of that green room before the presentation. That was just, and then Dale explaining himself to Craig Baird on the way up to the stairs and all that. So that was good stuff.
Yeah, good TV. Good racing too. Carrera Cup, I thought, pretty good racing. It's going to be a good year for Porsches. We'll talk more about Porsches when we start talking about Taupo in a couple of weeks, but Yeah, for the track sweepers at the end of the day, Shebex, at 6:25 races or 7 o'clock if you're Friday. Yeah. They were pretty willing, weren't they?
Yeah, they were 100%. And F2 and F3, boys.
Oh, I thought it almost went full Super 2 there for a bit, didn't it?
Really?
Both of them. It was great. I love the tyre deck. Yep. It kept those races alive the whole way. It's like, oh mate's got this in the bag, and then, oh no, his wheels are falling off here. So it was really entertaining stuff. I got my thoughts on that in the Hots and Knots, but I'm still probably an F3 fan, more so than an F2 fan. I know Richard would absolutely disagree with me.
I'd probably the opposite, to be honest, but the F3 racing was bloody good. Bloody good. Should we delve into it? Should we open the can of worms that is the Hots and Knots of
the
week?
Well, just before we do, I'm sure Mark just wants to give us a bit of an update NASCAR. And, of course, Shay Van Gisbergen, 21st, was he, Mark?
Well, oh, sigh. he was leading the Xfinity race at the Circuit of the Americas quite easy. Late, Ed Jones brought out a caution. Shane got screwed on the restart, got into a bit of a bumping match there with Austin Hill, returned the favour. Kyle Larson got through for the win. Shane wound up being pinged 30 seconds for cutting a corner. Like, there was no second chances. There was no warnings. If you cut the corner by 1 inch, you were gone. You copped a 30-second penalty, so that was rubbish and something that the NASCAR industry has absolutely blown up about this week. So expect some changes there next year. They literally had track limits on one corner, and Shane cut it and copped a 30-second penalty and finished nowhere. He got mired a bit on Sunday. I don't think the car was quite there. I don't think it had the pace anyway. But it wound up being the first caution-free race since Road America a few years ago. So it was a bit of a dud race. The latest generation NASCAR over there, it's a copy of the supercars architecture. And you know how supercars sometimes last year had dud races?
Yep.
They had one of those in the NASCAR Cup Series.
Yeah.
Something to think about there. William Byron got the win from Christopher Bell. It wound up being a reasonably decent finish, but they're off to Richmond and a return of short-ish track racing, which has been really, really good this year. So that should be interesting to watch.
And it would be remiss of us not to mention Scotty Mack, and he's second.
We'll come to that. We'll come to that.
Oh, will we? Okay.
Cool. I'm sure I've got a hot around it, and I'm sure Mark has some knots around it.
All right, let's get into it.
I've got a knot around it. How'd you know?
Oh, I just I know how this hot and knot game works. I see you've played hot and knot before.
It is time for Hots and Knots. Richard.
All right. It's been a long show already, so we'll rattle through these. Hot, my weekend.
Yep.
My weekend, hot. That was living the dream stuff. Hot, Pirelli took a punt on the Formula One tyre regulations by bringing the softest ever tyres they've run at Albert Park before in hope that it would run a two-stop race and finally inject some strategic excitement into Formula One races, which have been one-stop dull affairs for some time. They got it right. Well done, Pirelli. Was it a ball-tearer race? No, but it had lots of intrigue, and there was some good overcut, undercut, tyre wear stuff going on. Nice job. I thought that was a tick. Hot TV ratings. Channel 10's ratings up 3%. Averaged 750,000 for the Grand Prix. A reach of 1.5 million. When you throw Fox Sports numbers in there, that's a Grand Prix that's been watched by well over a million people in Australia with a reach of probably over 2, maybe 2.5. Formula One pretty healthy on television in Australia. Well done. That's a great, great tick. Good for the sport. Hot that there wasn't a track invasion. There were some nerves around this. Our colleagues on the big screen coverage worked very hard to make sure that people got the message that they weren't allowed to invade the track. And the reason it's hot that it didn't happen is that it's all the ammunition that the AGPC need to go back to the FIA, to go back to the government and everybody and say, come on, everyone behave themselves this year. We've now got the procedures in place to manage it and to stop what happened last year from happening. Let's bring back that track invasion at the end of the year in a way that's safe so no one goes early. I think they've got that right. And the fact that no one broke the rules at the end there was a huge tick for the Australian Grand Prix, because the only thing Sunday afternoon lacked was that ridiculous outpouring of emotion and feeling with everybody on the pit straight under the podium. which has been one of the most iconic shots of that race for years. And that was the only thing Sunday missed for mine from a show point of view. So hopefully that means we get it back. Hot to the Royal Australian Air Force's Heritage Squadron and the flyover from the Mustang all weekend, especially when it was a bit overcast on Sunday morning and he had to go real low. That was outstanding work, and there's no greater sound than a Rolls-Royce Merlin engine, and that dude was having a good time. Actually, it wasn't a P51 Mustang. It was a CA-18 Mustang, and the CA-18, Shebex, is Commonwealth Aircraft Corporation. So that was built in Australia, that plane. There you go. Fun fact.
There you go.
Hot, yeah. Hot to Williams. I know this might be controversial, but of all the teams that could offer us up talent in session from Formula One, Williams provided, and they offered us up James Vowles not once but twice for our boy Sam Powell to speak to, once in Friday before and once on Saturday after, and we all know what before or after was. So as tough a weekend as they had, well done to Williams Grand Prix for offering up the team boss for the domestic broadcaster to have a chat to. Very much appreciated. Hot weekend for Spaniards in motorsport. Pretty bloody good, as it turns out. Carlos Sainz wins the Australian Grand Prix. Alex Palou wins the almost $1 million IndyCar Challenge at Thermal. Jorge Martin won the Portuguese MotoGP. Aaron Carne won the Moto2 Portuguese Grand Prix, Spaniard. And Daniel Holgado won the Moto3 Portuguese Grand Prix. Believe it or not, he too, Spanish. Pretty good day in sport if you are from España. Very nice. Hot Bathurst 6 hours this week, boys. 318 cars.
No, what?
Across the 6 hour and six support categories. 318 cars. Huge. And also hot, doubly hot. It's on free-to-air television as well. So SBS Saturday and Sunday and Fox and KO if you would rather lean that way. We don't judge. Hot also, Formula Ford, back at Mount Panorama in a National Series competition. Do you know when the last time the National Formula Ford Championship raced at Mount Panorama?
2012. I was going to say 2011.
2012. Jack LeBrock won all three races. Heard of him. Macaulay Jones and Anton DiPasquale were on the podium. And there was a young kid from Warwick named Matt, and he finished 6th, 9th, and 10th in the three races. Wonder whatever happened to him. Hot Scott McLaughlin won $350,000 in the wasn't-quite-a-million-dollar challenge IndyCar race. And says he's going to spend it on his mortgage and beers for his team, which sounds like an entirely sensible life choice from our boy, Scott McLaughlin. So well done, Scotty. And that's where I'll leave my hots.
Mark.
Shout outs, Rob Van Leeuwen, AVL's uncle, runs the media side of things at the Grand Prix, and he knocks it out of the park. Also, Canon Professional Services are very professional. Thank you. Hot. Definite highlight for the weekend was walking past the commentary box on Friday, and one of the commentators waved to me with mid-commentary. That was a nice touch. Hey, what was the guy down the commentary box end there? Not many of those commentary boxes were filled with commentary things. What's the go of that?
No, well, it's a big thing, and lots of people going remote with 24 races in a season. A lot of people not sending crew. Sky Sports F1 had four people, talent, on the ground. Rachel Brooks, Ted, of course, Martin and Crofty. And that was it. Everyone back in the much maligned studio in the UK. I don't know if I should say this or not, but I'm going to. Who cares? One member of the Sky Sports team was working for us on the weekend and was there. He was getting the occasional message from some of his colleagues who were complaining bitterly about the fact that free practice 3 started at 3 o'clock in the morning UK time. I was like, well, welcome to our Grand Prix watching world, boys. A lot of them working remotely. Interestingly, and this is a massively impressive thing. So the Formula 2 commentary was Alex Jakes and Alex Brundle, right? As you would expect. And watched the Saturday race, and it sounded great, and the two of them worked quite well together. And I knew for a fact that Alex Jakes was calling from the UK. And then Alex Brundle pops up and does the grid interviews post-qualifying with the top three. I thought, well, either they've invented the teleporter from Star Trek or
or he's here and he's there.
They had one guy in Australia and one guy back at base at Biggin Hill.
That's tough.
And made it sound seamless. So full credit to them, because that's the worst nightmare scenario for me. That just sounds horrible. Anyway.
And can I just quickly jump in here as well? Because a little known fact would be that all the cameras at Albert Park this year were remotely sending their pictures back to the UK, where everything was being cut. Nothing was cut back here in Australia. Amazing logistics for that to all happen. And then so effectively, the camera pictures go to the UK, and then they send the pictures back here clean, and then the networks such as Ten and Sky and that all put their own graphics over them, and there you have it. That included supercars and all categories. It wasn't just Formula One. Amazing stuff. Sorry, Mark.
No, all good. Another highlight was winning an award for the race talk on the weekend. I was voted the ugliest person in the F1 paddock.
Seriously?
Yeah. Did you know that there's two types of people working in the F1 paddock? Male and female models, and also fat blokes at McLaren. And there's no in between. and on that, this is absolute peak elite wankism at its very best. But is there a better sound in life than that F1 paddock turnstiles?
That's so good.
If that was my phone's little notification thing, I'd probably be more upbeat about responding to text messages.
You would, wouldn't you? But yeah.
It's not, so I don't respond to text messages. I talked about the Red Bull Power Station last week and their $4,950 Sunday tickets. And not that I'd know, but they had really great toilets, which were located right next to the media center, I'm told. They had really fancy pants facilities, nice niceties like deodorant, sunscreen, gum, band-aids, paracetamol pills, face wipes. Really good value for your $5,000. Five stars would recommend, apparently.
Nice.
Can we talk for a moment about the Valtteri Bottas car share, Uber car share ad?
Oh, God, yes.
What a thing.
Yeah.
Dead set. That's how you do it, isn't it?
Yeah. If there's a better bit of motorsport marketing done this year, I've yet to see it. That's superb.
They just posted the outtakes and they're just
good. Yeah.
And on that, Thomas Randall on the
money.
Exactly. Thomas Randall on the piano.
Yes.
How about him on the piano?
Yeah.
Five stars.
Yeah, full credit. I think it was Ben Green helped shoot that for Supercars. Brian Ingerson helped produce it. Jesse Yates was heavily involved in that package as well. And Nath Prendergast obviously pulled it all together for Supercars Media. And Formula One were well on board. And it got a collab on Instagram and went to 5 million views very quickly.
Yeah, awesome. Nice. I went to a quasi-presser by Motorsport Australia and they had Christian Mansell and Tommy Smith there. And boy, doesn't Christian Mansell, he presents and speaks so well. I hope he keeps climbing the ladder because he'd be a good thing for Formula One. Also, he's got a neck for Formula One or maybe a front rower. Dead set, he has got a neck on him. His head's never going to fall off. So hot to you, Christian Mansell. Melbourne weather, that was good.
Yeah, wasn't it?
Yeah, not bad. Lewis Hamilton, I'm a fan. I'm all in now. He just genuinely seems like a great person. Him and George, they had the Q&A up there on the main stage, and they're just fantastic. And I think George has probably learned a fair bit from Lewis over these years. They're great. Also, my final hot here goes to the singer of the national anthem who held that final note on Advance Australia Fair for what seemed like 3 minutes waiting for the roulettes to finally turn up. So, boy, this is a long note. Like, everyone's clapping. None of the drivers have moved. The singers are... and just kept going. It just kept going.
Beautiful.
Not goes the roulettes.
Outstanding. Shebex, any from you?
No, well, they've pretty much been mostly covered, and we had a couple of general ones there earlier. I will give a hot to McLaren, though, even though I gave them a knock for forcing Oscar Piastri to give up that position. But had he have held third, I think, Richard, your hot may have turned into a knot of the track invasion. I don't believe people would have stayed behind the fence had Oscar Piastri been on the podium.
Yeah, I think the lid would have been lifted, wouldn't it?
Yeah, 100%. And Carrera Cup Racing, fantastic stuff. Great to call. Harry Jones, he's come back, hard to say, a better driver than what he was before he left.
Yeah.
And he just looks fantastic. So he's probably the man that's going to be the one to beat for the championship this year. Knotts.
All right, a couple. One I'm going to focus on, but if you all rattle through. Not... not for hospital ramping and congestion, because everyone's going to go get their appendix out now, so it's going to get real busy, busier than it already is. They already can't cope. So now it turns out the key to success is removing your appendix, and it's going to get busy in hospital. So that's a not. I'm going to not the Boost Pole Position Award cap debacle. It's just stupid. The whole thing is stupid. All stupid. I don't like it. Not Ford fans. Sorry, but when you look like you're in a competitive position and you finally get some parity, your teams take each other out.
That's crazy.
Also stupid. Not a lot of experts on the internet who, with the look of one little video or one TV broadcast, are instantly able to determine whether a race needs to be red flagged or virtual safety card. Race control know what they were doing. They knew exactly what was going on. They managed it correctly with the George Russell shunt. The only car that was within range of doing anything bad to George Strun across the track was Lance Stroll. And as the video that has emerged since then, his engineer yelled at him quite seriously and he slowed down and got through it. Everyone else was miles behind. It was managed correctly. If anything, throwing the VSC when they did managed the field better than had they thrown the red flag. And then the red flag would have also caused other dramas, because George would have finished sixth, despite having two wheels littered off his car and landing on his side, because it would have gone back a lap. So try explaining that one to your mates.
Did Nando brake test him? Certainly look like it.
Well, the data seems to indicate.
There's one bit there.
Yeah. It was a scrappy race for Fernando Alonso.
Nick Perkett gave a little bit of an insight into it, didn't he? And,
well, Nick was slightly diplomatic, because Nick's race team uses Fernando's go-karts and they're mates now. Yeah, so, you know, which is totally fine. I get that. Probably time for a review of the safety features of that corner. I love the corner, and it was interesting in the cool down room, the F1 driver saying, great corner. Maybe it's time we have a look at the fences, because it has caused quite a lot of drama in the last 2 years. Don't change the corner. It's an awesome corner, flat out high speed, ballsy stuff. But perhaps the wall on driver's left could be changed. Driver's right, not sure if there's room, because it turns out there's a lake there. But let's see what happens with that. OHS went mad too on the weekend, because now not only is there an extremely strict speed limit on the internal roadway network at Albert Park, as there should be, if you are now in a golf cart or a buggy, that buggy must have seatbelts. And there were several instances where people were not wearing their seatbelts, and their golf buggy was confiscated. They were kicked off where they stood or buggied, removed from their golf buggy, and it was subsequently confiscated from them, despite the 10k an hour speed limit, which you can never do. And yeah, you might get a slight bump if you have to stop suddenly. OHS gone utterly, utterly mental. But the biggest knot for mine is, I think now it's time to have a serious review of logistics within Albert Park, and in particular pedestrian access to the infield, and removing the spectator area and the ability for fans to congregate down where the supercar pits in F2 and F3 are now. Removing that big area, which used to have some activations and merch and big grassed areas for people to chill out and a big screen, it's forced everyone back up towards Carrera Cup to the big infield area behind turn one and turn two, and also where the stage is, and then the pontoon, you know, the road to the pontoon. As a result, the infield stuff was too busy at times, and in particular the crossing where you come out of the tunnel, and also around the back where you cross over from next to the Carrera Cup paddock to go towards the lake in the middle and potentially cross the pontoon or go up to the stage. It was too busy, and there were plenty of pretty stressed people caught in a massive traffic jam while they waited for cars to come out of the tunnel, golf carts to go one way or another, whatever it might have been. And then it was the same the other way, with cars getting held for a long time while 4.5 million spectators crossed over the walkway to go from one side to another. It's beyond capacity. There's so much joy and happiness in that event. You don't want something like that to cause someone grief. And at times it looked pretty crushing in there. And I worry about that. So I don't know what it is. I don't know if you put bridges there. I'm not sure. But I think it's something that the AJPC need to, and I'm sure we'll look at, because it felt like on the infield, at least this year, that event was at 110% capacity. You wouldn't want to get any more people in there, especially that big area behind turn one and turn two and the hill up towards turn three. So I don't know what they do. I don't know how they do it. But before they look at selling more tickets to that event, be it putting more grandstands up, access has to be the first priority, both at gates, but then also especially internally, because that was the most notable thing that jumped out at me over the course of the weekend that needed tuning up.
Mark?
Too much F1 practice. Cars sitting out 25 minutes. What a waste of time. Have a sprint race instead, or more F2, F3 races. Do something. Practice is a waste of time. Yeah, the fencing, the extra fencing, that was all a bit of a joke. You know, they padlocked, closed all the photography hidey holes. So there was times over the weekend when they didn't unlock the padlocks. If some dickhead wanted to run on the track, they just climb the mesh that's there anyway, like they did last year. They weren't climbing through photo holes to get onto the track. They climbed the bloody mesh that you can stick your feet in. Anyway, all the stuff they did wouldn't have saved that. Anyway, that's another problem. Having a massive stack in the historic parade is a knot. It happened on Friday. Old mate decided he was going to shave 15 seconds off his lap time by not breaking at turn three. And turns out he had a massive stack. F2, those rear wings are bloody stupid.
Yep.
Don't they look abhorrent? Mm. They look terrible. Especially there was one car there as orange with a fluoro green wing on it. That I nearly spewed.
Yeah.
Did anyone see that there was an F2 car sponsored by CSG something or other? I hope it wasn't coal seam gas, because that would be really off-brand for the whole F1 movement towards environmentalism. That'd be bad. Look, we love the safety announcements. Friend of the show, Greg Rust, provides for the Australian Grand Prix, but I'm afraid I can't take the notices that are provided by our other friend of the show, Matt Nolte, is seriously. I don't know what it is. You know, it just doesn't, it lacks the gravitas. I don't know. I can only listen to Greg Russ safety announcements and
that's
not
fair.
Matt Nolte.
No, that's the most legit knot we've had on the show ever. Mm.
Logan Sargent, boy, didn't he cop the rough end of the pineapple there? Doesn't he know he's placing the team? Jeez Louise. Oh, boy. And one funny one, like, you notice that they watered all the grass verges. The grass verges looked beautiful and green, and then everything else was bone dry and brown.
Yeah.
It just looked a bit silly on the TV. Anyway, something to think about. Nico Hülkenberg tapped into Carlos Sainz at the start of practice in scenes reminiscent of myself at the Sandown car park in 2010.
Memories.
It happens to the best of us.
Yep.
Turn six, I love it. It's awesome, especially the supercars, because they all go through there all skanked up, but not many of them had a massive stack there. Awesome, awesome, awesome corner. The thing is, that wall on driver's left that George hit, that Dennis Hauger hit, that Albon hit last year, there's a bloody great tree there. Yeah. They need to lop that tree down. As soon as they lop that tree, they can fix that runoff. But they can't, because it's a tree.
Yeah.
So it was there first. The Melbourne walk, what an absolute bloody zoo. I kind of wish I was that crazy about something.
Yeah.
And compounding things more so is for the finish of the day, the fact that they removed the stage from that area and they replaced it with the ESPY bar.
Yep.
So when the F1 paddock was filtering out at the end of the day, everyone copped an absolute spray from a bar full of punters who had an absolute skin full of $15 beers. Handy. Something Melbourne should be very proud of. So well done that. Elsewhere, did you see Marco Andretti's axle fell out?
I did see that.
Car truck?
Yeah.
What the hell was that all about? That was bizarre.
What happened? Well, the front fell off.
Yeah. No, the back fell off.
Yeah, in this case, yeah.
And finally, IndyCar Thermal Club $1 million challenge worth $500,000. When your format takes a fool's cap page to explain the format, I think you've probably missed it somewhat.
Yep.
Cool.
And then it wasn't a particularly good race either.
It was so rubbish.
Yeah.
She was a late hot that I totally forgot to add. Mick and Jack Doohan. That was entertaining.
It was, but I'll compound that with a knot for old Formula One cars still being unreliable because the new Benetton lasted exactly two sessions and sounded great and then broke.
Yep. We're not broke. We'll be back next week.
Well, speak for yourself.
Have a great week up at the 12-hour, Richard.
I'll go to the 6. I've done the 12.
6 hours, oh, yes.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's going to be good. Please join us if you're going to be there, Mark.
It's in negotiation.
Yeah, okay. It's going to be good, though. Good race. A good little broadcast team assembled for that, too. A few different names, different faces that will be there, and a few legends. So do tune in for that on SBS, Fox, and KO Saturday and Sunday. More look car racing. How good.
Look forward to it. Thank you, Richard. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Tony.
Thank you.
And thank you for joining us right here on The Grid. We'll catch you again next week.
This program is a Radio Show Limited production.
Tell your friends there's more at RadioLeMans.com.